The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Joining me as my special guest on the program today is Dan Steffens. He's president of EPG Group, an energy group specializing in energy. Dan, we've seen natural gas in the U.S. go all over the place. I can remember a couple of years ago when it was up to $10 and $12. In fact, a couple of times, even at the beginning of the decade, and especially affecting here in California, we got up to $4. We're back below $4, but you think we could be going to $5. Explain your thesis why $5 gas is a possibility, let's say, in the next 12 months.
Well, the real thing is that our production capacity has declined. I mean, there's a lot of gas out there. There's no doubt these shale plays have maybe hundreds of years of supply, but reserves in the ground are not the same as production capacity because the price of the commodity, natural gas, dropped below the break-even price in all of these shale plays. When it got down to $2 a summer, all the E&P companies pulled their rigs out of those plays and moved their rigs over to the much more profitable oil plays like the Bakken, Three Forks, or Permian Basin, or the three biggies. But as a result, and all these shale plays are rapidly declining. They have sharp decline curves on those wells. So they, in fact, they produce about 70-80% of their reserves in the first couple of years, which is extremely profitable, you know, to get it out that fast. But you have to keep drilling wells to keep the production capacity up. And this is a huge natural gas market in the United States. So it eats up the, you know, the surplus real quickly. And now we're headed toward next winter with, you know, a lot less gas in storage than we had this year. And I think you're going to see much higher prices as winter approaches.
Yeah, let's talk about, because if you were to tell somebody looking at the market, I know traders, if you were to say, hey, $5 gas, I'm looking at a chart and they're going to say, no way, you'd be called a wacko. Let's talk about some of the things that are in natural gas's favor. One of them is Mother Nature.
Oh, right. I mean, we had, you know, colder than normal winter, and winter lasted longer, which ate up storage. We are now sitting at over 800 billion cubic feet of gas less in storage than what we had last year at the end of April. So that's a huge difference. I mean, we're approaching a TCF less gas in storage. And that gap to last year is going to continue to expand. We're to the five-year average, we're like 120 BCF less than where we were last year. And I'm expecting that to expand so that as we get into next year, let's say we're 100 to 200 BCF below the five-year average going to winter, the traders are going to see that and they're going to have to bid up gas supply.
Now, something that you have put in a recent publication of yours, you show a chart of natural gas inventories, and whenever natural gas dips to about 1,200 BCF, there's something magical happens. The price heads up. Explain that.
Well, for one thing, when you see 1,200 BCF in storage, you think, well, that's still a lot of gas, but that's pretty much where we are at the base load. And in order to get that level out of that gas out of storage, you'd have to pump in inert gas into the storage facilities to force that out. And that's very expensive. And they never want to do that. So the real base level is around, you know, a TCF to 1.2 TCF of gas in storage. So right now we're at like 1.7. Now it's going up now. We're in the refill season right now. So it's headed back up. And we'll have enough gas to get through the winter. But last year we just had this huge surplus headed into the winter. And that's what drove prices down. And everybody saw that early last summer. And you saw gas get down to $2, even below $2 for a few months. And that's, you know, ridiculous. Nobody can make money anywhere drilling gas wells for $2 MCF gas.
You know, let's talk about, Dan, we're in what we call close to the shoulder season, which is April to June, where we start building up storage again, because many people think of natural gas as a winter fuel. It's also a summer fuel because a lot of these peak power plants that, like for my example, my own state of California, when we get these heat waves, these peak power plants come on stream and they're powered by natural gas. So we're in that a sort of shoulder period where we're building up natural gas. And let's talk about that, because we also have summer coming upon us.
Yeah, like they do think of gas being just this winter fuel, but it's not. The amount of gas we use for electric power generation has gone up sharply. Like, I'm looking at a chart right now, and in 2009, we used 6.9 trillion cubic feet of gas for electric power generation. In 2012, we used 9.1 BCF. And one reason is a lot of coal-fired power plants are being shut down because they can't meet, you know, carbon emission requirements, and it's just too expensive to retool those power plants. So the utility companies are switching over to natural gas for generating a lot of power. Even though it peaks in the summer, that's continuous all year now. They don't shut down those plants in the wintertime. We're using more gas for industrial purposes. It's a feedstock for a lot of plastics and other things all around your office, I'm sure. So although the use of gas, demand for natural gas really peaks in the winter for home heating, residential and commercial heating, but we use it all year. And this is about a 26.5 trillion cubic feet market. And the number one use of gas is for electric power generation.
Yeah, because something that we've seen over the last 4 years, the consumption of natural gas has gone from about almost 23 trillion cubic feet to almost 26 trillion feet.
Right.
And bear in mind, that was during a period where the United States was involved in probably the worst recession we've seen since 1981.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's gone up every year, regardless of the recession. So if the economy's bouncing back, and down here in Houston, we hear of all these projects coming here that they're going to expand petrochemical plants and bring that all back here. I mean, natural gas as a cheap source of power and a cheap source of feedstock for a lot of manufacturing is going to bring a lot of manufacturing back to the United States and a lot of jobs back to the United States. Our cheap fuel and cheap feedstock is going to offset the cheap labor that you have in the Asian market. So the union should be all behind this. I mean, they should be fully supportive of this industry. And it's what's really going to save our economy, I think.
You know, something that we've seen, and there's two themes that we hear coming from economists. One is the reindustrialization of the United States and energy renaissance that we've seen from shale, horizontal fracking. Mm-hmm. And you just mentioned that more and more of our electricity generation is using natural gas. We also have industrial demand. So at the same time, even though we have the capability of producing more gas, we are now seeing more demand coming in from the consumer level for electricity. I mean, you know, we're talking about hybrid cars. We're talking about electric cars. Well, you know, that's great. You're not burning oil, but you are going to be consuming electricity to recharge those batteries at night. So let's talk about the impact of both the combination of industrial demand and electricity demand and its impact on natural gas.
Yeah, I think those two are going to continue to go up as long as our market for gas stays so cheap. And let's say gas gets back to $5 or $6, which I think it is where it needs to be in order for the E&P companies to allocate the capital needed to keep 600-700 rigs drilling for gas all the time, because that's about where we need to be to keep our balance between supply and demand pretty steady state. We need to get away from these, you know, big swings in commodity prices for gas, because, you know, it just, you're not going to drill gas wells if you're going to lose money on them. So we need to keep it at a price where you make money. And this is a big market, and it's, you know, really going to help out the whole country. I mean, think of all these wells. These are long horizontal wells. They are cased all the way to the end, which means that's more demand for steel. I recently drove from Houston across southern Louisiana, and I noticed my wife was saying, I said, look, about every fifth truck is a flatbed filled with tubulars headed over to South Texas to the Eagle Ford Shale development. I mean, what that demand for steel, and that's high-grade steel, that's got to be great for Pennsylvania, the eastern steel market. That's got to be great. So this market's definitely building, and if the economy rebounds, I think if we're looking at another 4 to 6% increase in gas demand from 2012 to 2013.
Dan, what about also, you know, when the price of natural gas dropped precipitously last summer, we saw nat gas prices drop in that $2 range, and then, of course, the rig count began to drop. Mm-hmm. And one thing that, when it comes to energy, it's not like a factory that's producing widgets. You just flip a switch and boom, you're producing more natural gas. A lot of companies, especially E&P companies, put together their capital budgets for the year going forward in the fourth quarter. When you have weak prices, you know, it may not be until natural gas prices get above $4 and they stay there that some E&P company can say, all right, for the next year, we're going to spend X, we're going to add more rigs. So it may not be to 2014 before we see gas drilling pick up and then along with it, production.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. I mean, I was in a panel discussion here in Houston about 6 weeks ago, and that's exactly what I said. It's not like, okay, oh, now gas is $6. Everybody's going to run out and start drilling gas wells. You have to reallocate. The E&P companies have set their capital budgets. They've allocated most of their capital to drilling the Bakken, Eagle Ford, Permian Basin, Niobrara, and these oil plays because the rate of return on those wells at $90 oil is fantastic. And until the gas price gets high enough to where it can compete with those projects, you're not going to allocate capital back to those wells. Just because now we're barely above break even in the Haynesville at, you know, $4 gas, you're going to start drilling a bunch of Haynesville wells now. Those are, you know, $8, $9 million wells. And then you've got to move the equipment back over there. All those big rigs, or a lot of those big rigs, have moved to the Eagle Ford. Well, it's very costly to move those rigs back. And then let's say that on January 1st, we've now gas is back to $5-6, and we're going to drill more gas wells. Well, the drilling of the gas well is not what gets more gas supply. Now you have to complete the gas well. Then you have to connect it to a gathering system, goes through a processing plant, and gets into our pipeline. Because the gas coming out of the ground has got a lot of other liquids and impurities in it that has to be cleaned up before it's pipeline quality gas. So it takes time before you see that gas supply increase. And so once these large fields roll over and go on the decline, and the Haynesville's on decline, Barnett's on decline, the Fayetteville's on decline, Canada's on decline, and the Gulf of Mexico's on decline. With all those big areas on decline, in order to get that even leveled up and headed back up again, it's going to take a massive reallocation of capital and getting more rigs going, focused on getting more gas. So it takes time. That's why you, over time, if you look at a 10-year chart of the price of gas, you see big spikes and valleys in that price.
You know, something I just want to clarify our listeners. We're not saying here that we're running out of natural gas. We have plenty of natural gas. It's just a matter of the price of natural gas. And one thing I've always admired about the energy industry versus, let's say, the mining industry, the energy industry is very quick to react to prices. If they see natural gas prices drop at $2 or $3, they say, you know what, guys, let's take these rigs out. We're shutting down. And if we can go over to the oil side of the business and put those rigs to work at oil in the $95 range, we can make a lot of money there. So it's just a question of pricing. If you get low prices, guess what? You're going to eventually get less supply until the market corrects itself. So I just want to clarify there that we're not trying to give the impression that we're running out of natural gas. It's just at lower prices, people don't want to produce the stuff.
Right. I mean, you're not going to go out and drill $8, $9 million wells and then produce them at $2 gas and lose money. You're going to wait. You're going to hold that acreage, and you're going to wait until the price gets up to, you know, a reasonable profit margin before you allocate capital if you're running an E&P company. A good example, EOG Resources, they have got lots of gas reserves held by production, but they're not going to really develop those gas reserves because they also hold a lot of Bakken acreage, a lot of Eagle Ford acreage, and especially their Eagle Ford acreage. They're going to develop that first because the profit margins are fantastic on that at $90 oil. And for your listeners to understand is the North American gas market, it's a regional gas market. I mean, our gas is selling for a third to a fourth of what the global price is, the Asian price is for natural gas. But the oil trades on a global market because the infrastructure, the transportation system is so much better. You can export it easily or import it easily. Well, we don't have that capability with gas. So natural gas trades on regional markets. And just as you said, said, Jim, we're not running out of gas reserves. And that's one thing I'm afraid you're going to start hearing. All day, the industry lied to us. We don't have all these shale gas reserves. Well, they're in the ground, but you got to spend a lot of money to get them out of the ground.
Let's talk about something that also that makes natural gas. It's really a regional priced market. In other words, we don't have pipelines that go from, let's say, California to Japan underneath the ocean, like we have pipelines going from across land masses. And it doesn't make a lot of sense if there's natural gas. For example, one of the issues that I've heard brought up, well, we'll have LNG imported into the United States to make up a difference. But if I'm a company, let's say I'm in the Middle East, I'm producing liquefied natural gas, why would I sell it to the U.S. at $3.96 when I can get anywhere from $14 to $18 in Asia?
Right. But the Asian gas market, LNG market, was $18 an MCF in the first quarter. So, yeah, why would it come here? So it's not going to come here unless we compete with the global market. So you're not going to see LNG solve our problem if we have a shortage. Now, again, to your listeners, I don't think there's any risk that we're going to be running out of gas, even gas supply for what we need on a daily basis anytime soon. It's just that the market's going to tighten and we're not going to have the situation that we had last year. Last year, what happened last summer, when storage starts to fill early, what happens, Jim, is you have gas on gas competition for that last bit of storage. And therefore, the E&P companies call up, a pipeline company to sell, and they say, look, we don't need any more gas. Our storage level's full. And they say, well, what do you give me for it? I'll sell it to you for anything, because a lot of this gas is associated with oil wells, and I don't want to shut in my oil wells, so I'll produce this associated gas, and I'll just almost give it to you. And that's what happened last summer. But I don't think there's any danger of that happening this summer. Therefore, I just can't even imagine we're going to get that big drop in gas price when we get to July, August. And in fact, in July and August, that's when we have our peak demand for electric power generation, and all these gas-fired power plants that are spread across Texas come online so we can have electricity for our air conditioning down here.
Dan, let's break this down for our listeners. They're saying, okay, you're saying natural gas, which is just slightly under $4, has a strong possibility of going to $5. How do I play that until I see that $5 gas? Do I stick with the oil plays, or do I stick with companies that have a good balance between oil and natural gas? So while the oil play is the stronger play right now, they're making money in oil, but they just as easily can start shifting assets over to natural gas if natural gas prices start to rise.
Yeah, that's what I've been recommending to our members. Look at the ones that have a lot of both. And so they can shift capital quickly to natural gas. Plus, their earnings then for the rest of this year, each quarter, are going to get a big boost from this increase in natural gas price. So when they compare second quarter and third quarter earnings this year to last year, they're going to get a huge boost from that doubling of price on their gas production. And if oil prices stay where they are, I mean, we're hovering around $95, $96 today. I mean, these guys are looking at strong revenue growth for the next few quarters. So I'm recommending don't go for the pure gas companies. I mean, don't run out and start loading up on Chesapeake yet. But obviously, if gas gets back up to $7, $8, let's say, in the middle of next winter, then all these gas companies are going to really do really well. So
now, in your recommended portfolio, you sort of have the mid-cap to small-cap portfolios, and of course, we know that there's large-cap companies, the EOGs, the Devons, and companies like that, and then of course you have even balanced companies, even giants like Exxon with their purchase of XTO, have a nice natural gas component. So, depending on your risk tolerance, what I see here, Dan, is depending on how conservative and how much risk you can have, there's three ways you can play it. You can go with, let's say, a diversified company like an Exxon. You can go with an EOG, or you can go with some of, let's say, the smaller cap companies.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of them out there. And another space that I think your listeners should look at is the MLPs. The upstream MLPs like Lynn Energy, Vanguard Natural Resources, those guys have a lot of gas reserves. And when the NYMEX strip for gas moves up, then that gives them the leverage to go acquire more assets and grow, because they always hedge a lot of their production because their focus is on maintaining those cash distributions to their unit holders. And that space has drawn a lot of capital. And then also the midstream companies, because if the price of gas gets up, then a lot of these people that are flaring their gas in South Texas and the Eagle Ford or up in the Bakken are going to have a bigger sense of urgency to get those wells hooked up to the pipeline systems because they don't want to burn up them, and they're burning dollars if they're flaring that gas. So, you know, it's a more lucrative contract for the midstream companies too, and that business is just exploding. I mean, I've never seen the midstream business this good for this long, and boy, it looks fabulous right now.
Dan, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work at EPG Group, how could they do so, please?
Well, our website is energyperspectives.com, and we run a subscriber service. We publish reports. We have a newsletter that goes out every 3 weeks, but we also publish reports on individual companies, and we put out 80 to 100 company profiles per year with forecast models attached to them. And our focus is we kind of come up with a fair value estimate, what I think really the company's breakup value is today. And right now, there are a lot of upstream companies trading below breakup value, in my opinion. So this space, as good as they've done, first quarter results have been fantastic. The outlook for this year looks fantastic for most of the companies we're following, and they're still trading at very reasonable multiples. So, your listeners, they should visit energyperspectives.com. Check us out.
We've been speaking with Dan Steffens. He's president of energyperspectives.com. That's EPG Group. Dan, I want to thank you for joining us on the Financial Sense News Hour. All the best, and please don't be a stranger. We'd love to talk to you again.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Well, that ends my interview with Dan Steffens, a new personality on the FSN network. He runs Energy Perspectives Group. It's a research organization that looks at the area of energy. And natural gas is something that has a lot of misunderstanding. It's a local market, number one. We don't have pipelines that go from the United States that if we have an excess supply of natural gas, well, we'll just put it in a pipeline and ship it over to Asia where we can get $14 to $18. It doesn't work that way. Likewise with LNG, which is liquefied natural gas, if anybody's producing it overseas, why in the heck would you ever sell it here in the United States at $4 when you can get three, four, or even five times that amount in Asia or even in Europe? And it is one of the plays right now that I think is rather interesting in the energy industry is to look at companies that have both a natural gas resource and an oil resource, because if the price of natural gas drops, as we saw due to weather concerns last year, we had an unusually warm winter, and for that matter, a warm summer, which we didn't draw down our natural gas reserves as rapidly because we basically had a warm winter. So what do the guys in the energy business do? They do what any smart entrepreneur does. They pull the gas rigs and they say, let's put it over here and go for oil. We're oil at $96 a barrel. We're making some pretty good money. And that's why I think if you want to look at a play, and within the S&P, energy has been, in, let's say, an underperformer since the beginning of the year. You know, the top plays within the S&P have been the sort of the defensive plays like healthcare, staples, and utilities. But just in the last couple of weeks, we're seeing energy break out as people feel that, hey, central banks are printing money. We just had the Australian bank cut interest rates. We had the ECB cutting interest rates. And they're saying, you know what, we're going to do more of this. The money fest of printing money is alive and well. So there's going to be plenty of money in this market, which means that probably in the second half of the year, we could see a pickup in the economy. And if that happens, there's going to be a greater demand for energy. Likewise with natural gas. Speaking with Evelyn Garris, she expects a normal winter cycle as we get into, let's say, the fall and winter months of this year, which is going to mean more cold fronts, more demand for natural gas, not to mention the fact that we're using more natural gas, not only for industrial demand, which is why you're seeing companies locate factories here in the U.S., but also for electricity. You know, they're talking about all this green energy. Let's make more electric cars. Well, you know, those electric cars require one thing. It's called electricity. And the EPA is making it very tough for coal-fired plants to stay in business. We're seeing more coal-fired plants shut down, and what's replacing them is natural gas plants, which means the demand for natural gas is going to increase. And I think Dan is spot on. I think we could very well see $5 natural gas going forward. And there's three ways that you can play this as an investor. You can do it with large cap companies like Exxon. They have nat gas exposure as well as oil. You can do mid cap companies, your EOGs, your Devons, or even your small caps. But once again, do your research. But this seems to me like an opportunity. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.